Hello, it's Chris here. Don't be alarmed, I've just got a small announcement to make before we start. I knew when I launched Mountain a few months ago that one day I was going to have to find a way of funding it, and I'm delighted to say that I've done that. From this episode, OutKit will be supporting the podcast. They're an outdoor company based in England near Nottingham. I've actually been one of their customers for many years. They're a brilliant company run by great folk, and I am very happy to have them on board. So what does this mean? Well, firstly, it means that we're going to have some money to invest in finding and recording more incredible stories for you. And secondly, you'll hear a bit about OutKit before the start of each episode. Now, the company has been around for about 12 years now, but last year they started a charity. The OutKit Foundation was launched to help people overcome the barriers they might face to getting outdoors. They're supporting almost 50 projects across the globe. And one of the first to get funded was Venture Medical UK for their Nepal project. Venture Medical are creating three new rescue teams in Nepal who'll help the country respond to any future disasters. The project is well underway with volunteer instructors just finishing the first courses in Kakani, Nepal. Go to outkit.com for more details, and thank you very much to OutKit for supporting Mountain. I'm walking east at the moment, across a heather-covered hill. The sun's just come out, but these snow showers, really fierce snow showers, are blowing through. And I'm looking towards a very snowy Conavel. I've got Loch Assint behind me. I'm in the land of Sullivan, the land of a thousand lochans and shark's fin mountains. It's probably one of the world's most startling landscapes. I'm in the far northwest of Scotland. I'm in Assint, of course. But today I'm going to leave behind all this incredible scenery and go on a very different sort of adventure. I'm Christopher Slight, and this is Mountain. So we've just walked over this hillock, and then cut into the side of it is a cave entrance, which looks just like a little shelter, really. Like, there's nothing much to it, and it ends pretty quickly. But I'm assured that's not the case. And my guide today is James Roddy, climber, photographer, caver, but above all, I think, adventurer. James, where does it go?
Down there.
Oh, down there. I thought it was going to go through there.
No.
Right, I would have walked past this. What?
So
really?
At the back of here, you can hear the water, you can hear the river that we're going to cross in a few minutes. So we've got a hole and a few meters of crawling. Then there's quite a large chamber on just the other side of this. And the river that we just crossed on the way up, that flows through this chamber.
Well, I've never tried caving because I've always thought, why? Ooh, no, feel trapped underground. And looking at this space, I'm already... those emotions are coming back. What am I doing? It's about, I guess it's about a metre high, this crawl space.
Yeah, probably about a metre. It'll seem bigger once you're in it.
It'll seem bigger once I'm in it, right, okay.
He says.
Don't even get to wear a backpack. You get a sort of caving handbag for this sort of thing. Right, well, I'm going to put my gloves on and let's go.
Let your feet go down this massive hole. The floor's right here. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Right. It's quite loud.
Yeah. So this is the first stream chamber. This is part of the River Tralagil that forms the larger river on the surface. So what we're going to do is just cross the river just here and head up here into a grotto where it's much quieter.
Ascent is actually one of the few areas in Scotland where you have caves, and the glens around here are just riddled with them, these systems. And the one we're in today is called Crocnanuav. We're going to cross this stream now, and that's where I think the adventure's really going to begin.
Right, so what I'm doing is just checking what's going to be the best way through to the grotto. Nice pretty chamber, kind of stalagmites and a few things like that. So there's another passage down here which might also be better to do. There's about five different ways into it.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is the bit when I start getting worried about getting lost.
Oh, you're fine, I know exactly where we are.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, the roof's just lowering down a bit here.
So it is.
So what we've got is it's literally a few inches where it's just tight, and then past that it's kind of big again. What do you think of that?
Well, so what I'm looking at now is this sloping roof of rock that comes down that leaves a really quite improbably small space. This is the bit of caving that is why I've never done it, because I've always this fear of getting stuck.
This is the fun bit.
This is the fun bit. You don't get worried about getting stuck.
I never get worried about getting stuck. I think squeezing in a cave is kind of, it's often overhyped as being more dangerous than it really is. Yeah, once you're doing it, it's actually just kind of uninhibited fun, really.
Okay, well, I'm all for a bit of uninhibited fun. So what I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to take off my... There's no way I'm going to squeeze through there a recording kit and maybe pass it up to you.
Yeah, the trick is to get flat as soon as you can, like that. See,
right.
You don't want your knees up like that. Otherwise, you just kind of feel a bit... You know, your back is too high. So you want to kind of just, like, crawl along on your front. So if you just watch the way I do it, I'll take your caving bag through as well.
Okay, I will watch the way you do it.
And then you just kind of wriggle forward here. And then you're through. And that's it.
And that's it.
So nice and flat.
Yeah, flat. Okay.
And then
flat.
Arms forward. And then just keep coming towards me, and then it gets nice and big.
Oh, yeah. Well, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow, my first cave squeeze.
Don't stand up, Billy.
Don't stand up, right? Yeah, that's always a good rule, isn't it? Right, thanks. So, James, we've come through that squeeze, and then just looking up to the right, we've got all these formations on the ceiling. What are we looking at there?
These are straw stalactites, that would be called, or just soda straws, as some caves call them. Literally just formed by the kind of percolation of water through the limestone, through the rock, and filled with calcium carbonate, kind of dissolved in the water. Whenever it drips through, it deposits a wee bit of calcite on the ceiling of the cave, and over a very, very long time, it deposits these beautiful kind of white straws of crystal that you can see before you, and then they'll drip onto the floor below and form some of these curious stalactite formations. Although it's not really a stalactite, that's more a sort of looks like a kind of bit of snot, really.
There is, it looks, well, I would say a lump of fudge, you know, more delicate about
fudge,
it.
Yeah.
That's formed directly under a stalactite.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And now here we've got some what looks like animal hair hanging off the roof just here. That's quite interesting.
I
wonder if that's from a sheep or a deer. That's quite strange. I've never seen that before.
Because there are caves near here. I mean, there's the famous bone caves where they found
bones that they've dated to 45,000 years ago.
Definitely. So in the bone caves you have, I think that was the only place in the UK that we ever have actually bone evidence of polar bears having ever lived in the UK. That's how we definitely know they were here. I think these are quite unlikely to be from a polar bear, but...
But it is odd coming down to a place like this where you've got all this sort of fragile beauty around you, but thinking that, yeah, maybe this might have been the hideout of a bear back in the day.
Perhaps.
Hibernation spot. I mean, they found human skeletons as well in the bone case, haven't they?
I believe so, yeah. I think with the polar bear bones, there's a great deal of confusion as to how they got exactly where they were, because they're on the other side of a flooded section of cave. So I think cavers are still looking for a kind of dry entrance, which the bones may have either been washed in or the bear resided in there, or it's all a bit of a mystery, really.
What's next?
Right, so next we've got a bit of low roof. It's a couple of metres high, maybe just about stand up, and then another just little arch, nowhere near as tight as what we just came to, and then we've got quite a nice grotto, just called the grotto. We've got a few more formations, and we'll find that we'll get back to the stream there as well that we've just crossed. We'll cross back onto it. All right?
Yep.
Nice and flat as you can. Try and keep your head as low as you can, just don't want to hit the roof. That's it. Forward.
Wow. So this is really quite something.
This is the grotto. This chamber is called the grotto. This is probably one of the better kind of displays of crystal formations you'll find in probably in Scotland, really. Really nice array of crystal formations and stalactites kind of sticking out of the floor. They almost look like little like barn owls, I guess, or something. And so just here, this is what we call a gower pool, an ancient pool of water where you have a false floor of calcite above a layer of water below, and you have right at the bottom underneath the water you can see those odd little kind of almost like cauliflower shaped brown objects, and they're very special crystal formations that you mustn't touch because they're very, very old indeed and very, very fragile.
And this just looks like a frozen waterfall there.
It does, yeah. It looks like a column on an ice climb or like a frozen cascade. It goes from muddy brown at the bottom to kind of almost lime green at the top.
Scotland doesn't have a huge amount of cave systems. Why have we got one here? What's going on with the geology that gives us this amazing network of caves?
So what we have here is a band of limestone in the geology of the area. And limestone in Scotland, it's not really so common as it is in some parts of northern England. We've got huge areas of limestone there, but here we've got an area of limestone, and limestone basically, it dissolves in water and it allows the water to carve passageways through it. And what we have is a river on the surface that has found ways through cracks in the limestone and eroded away and found its way into weaknesses and found the line of least resistance through the rock underground.
I mean, all of Assent has got really interesting geology, hasn't it? Some of the rocks are some of the oldest on Earth, sort of 3,000 million years old. And then you can see, I think people say you can see the sort of the skeleton of the rocks quite clearly because there's no urban development and there's not a huge amount of vegetation. This sort of feels like a journey sort of into the skeleton a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I guess you get a chance to kind of look into deep geological time, I suppose. And it's quite a thing to come underground, Assent, and see what it looks like from below.
So where do we go next? Does the cave go any further than this?
Yeah, it does. So now we're going to do a scramble down from where we are, go down to the stream, and we'll do a wee crawl and a bit of a climb, and the cave will get quite a lot bigger. Here you can actually see, from the last heavy period of rain, you can see foam on the walls.
Oh,
from
sure,
from the flood there. That's the flood mark on the walls from the last big flood.
I was just crawling through this passage here and the sound of the water. Wow. Suddenly, that thundering rumble I could hear earlier. I suspect this is it.
So we're going up this little wall and then back on top and along that way. Over and above the waterfall.
Time to stash this gear, do you think?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
It's actually really difficult to get any sort of sense of how far we are down this cave or how deep we are underground. All I know for sure is that we've been on the go for about 2 hours now, and it certainly feels like we're really deep inside this hill. But we're about to get to the last massive chamber at the end of this cave system now. It's called Landslide Chamber.
Ooh.
So this chamber is, in total, probably about 90 to 120 metres wide from where we come up from the waterfall to the base. And the floor is comprised of two deep pools, one of which is more like a lake, really. We're just going to get to that in a minute. And running out of one of them is a piece of rope, which is a diving line. And it's quite a sight, and you can't help but wonder what goes down that dark hole beneath there.
Right, that's not just floating on the surface, that just disappears down into that deep well. And there are folk who go down.
There are, yes. Not me.
Wow.
And then on the roof here, we've got totally pristine formations that probably nobody's ever been able to touch because they're too high up the walls. And to our right, a massive area of roof breakdown where basically a huge landslide has just collapsed into the centre of the chamber, and there's a boulder probably the size of a small house, really, just laying right in the middle of the chamber.
There was a moment back there near the waterfall where I was crawling through that passage and you'd pointed out the foam, and then I was looking down and could see down by my hands and knees were sort of these classic signs of river erosion, little holes eroded by stones. And actually, it's the first time I did feel a slight sense of panic, because I thought, this floods where I'm at. This, in Spate, this would be full of roaring water.
Yes, it would, yeah. And obviously, you know, we have to keep an eye on the weather forecast before you go down a cave at all, because it is so, some of them are just so weather dependent. This one you just can't do in after heavy rain, or after, say, during the winter, if you get a period of a thaw and a heavy snow melt, it would just be entirely flooded to the roof and very, very dangerous.
See, when you were referring earlier to the last storm, I thought you were talking about the Ice Age, not not earlier in the winter.
Well, no. I mean, yeah, if you get 2 or 3 days of intense west coast weather here, you know, in the winter, it's the amount of rain that can fall is incredible, and it all has to flow somewhere.
My ears are playing weird tricks on me with that stream. I keep hearing voices and it's freaking me out a bit.
Oh yeah, that's a Told Man, as it's called. Yeah, it's a common thing to hear voices in a cave when there aren't any there. It's quite scary, especially in some of the abandoned mines, like in the Peak District. And yeah, it's some of them are well known for it, actually. You can be totally convinced you can hear somebody and there's nobody there.
Quite a different atmosphere in this chamber. You can instantly feel the space around you. The acoustic has changed quite distinctly. And it feels colder when you breathe. The huge plumes of moisture are coming out and catching in the light of your head torch. And then the roar of the river has dropped right down. And instead, you can just hear these drips of water hitting the pool. And I'm sat right on the edge of the larger pool at the moment. And in the head torch beam around the edges, you can see these orange, browny boulders. But then in the centre, it's just black. Completely, utterly black.
at that.
That's a little insect.
Oh, wow. Yeah, look at that. Even this far down underground, there's still a few things to be found alive down here. It's a tiny little fly just crawling around on some mud. I know that in some of the really huge caves in England and Wales, you actually get trout that have swum the underground passageways, and they go albino when they're underground. They lose all their colour and adapt to the darkness while they're underground. And yeah, like, you can just come across fish when you're several miles along a caving trip.
Now that would be spooky.
It really would. That's amazing.
Look at that, we've got a sort of hole above us in the ceiling.
No, that's not the thing. Look, all right. GSG, 1970. Grampian Speleological Group, 1970, with an arrow pointing to a narrow hole. Probably about 5 meters above us, but how on earth did they get there? Look at that, it must overhang by 3 meters from the floor with no holds that aren't sloping or wet. 1970, and it looks like they rubbed that in mud yesterday. It looks so fresh.
Not the sort of thing that a caving club would do now, I'm guessing.
No, at least they shouldn't. I think people are far more concerned about the preservation of the cave.
We're always talking about wilderness and trying to achieve a sense of wilderness and heading into the wilderness when, you know, hill walkers and climbers talk about that all the time. But whereas, as we know, the reality is that, you know, the hand of man is everywhere. And I suppose, you know, we've seen it today in this cave as well. But there is definitely more of a sense of we're on the edge of the unexplored.
Well, it makes you kind of question the definition of wildland, really, in the UK. I guess it's a subject which the outdoors community were obsessed about at the moment, wildland, what it means for us and how much we should have. But in so many caves, especially the larger ones, there are places in those caves, huge places where nobody has ever stood before. And the vast majority of cave passages in the UK have probably yet to be discovered. There's places down here that people go far less commonly than hills that we sometimes refer to as wilderness.
I'm always interested, though, in notions of adventure and how much of an adventure you can have in the UK today, you know, with mobile phone coverage and GPS mapping and all that. And in some ways, a lot of that technology that can help you above the surface is useless here, isn't it? It's really a way of cutting it off and really feeling self-reliant.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I suppose that's perhaps its greatest appeal, and probably one of the same reasons that I climb solo as well, in that you're kind of cutting things down to really quite a basic set of circumstances, and you are entirely self-reliant.
Do you ever sit down and wonder what draws you to places like this, to scramble up beside underground waterfalls, looking at flood foam and crawling through tight spaces and ending up next to a pool that disappears somewhere no one knows? What do you look into yourself and think, why do I want to come here?
I look into that all the time. I question it constantly, but maybe it's just because our human condition has become so almost, I know it's a cliche, but too safe, perhaps. Perhaps we do sometimes feel a need to just get away from all the stuff that just clutters us up all the time. Sometimes I find the world above a bit confusing. And it's a way of just, for a few hours or whatever, just to be entirely at a different basic level of existence and to journey inwards. Yeah.
Do you ever come to these places and kill the lights?
Yeah, yeah.
And sit there?
Yeah, I do. I did that once in a huge cave system in South Wales called Ogof down in Cilai. That's it's absolutely huge. It's about 17 miles of length of cave passage. And I was quite a long way into that in a trip, which was probably one of the most committing I've ever done, and I just sat in a totally silent passageway with no sound whatsoever and turned the torch off, and I just sat for 5 minutes and yeah, it was quite a thing, really. Quite a thing.
I'm going to turn my torch off. I don't think I've ever seen darkness this black.
There is no available light. There's absolutely nothing. You can have your hand in front of your eyes and there's nothing there, you know. It's total darkness.
Simultaneously calming and quite intimidating.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So we head back to daylight?
Yeah, why not? Daylight.
Daylight. I survived my first cave trip. Hey!
How was that?
Yeah, brilliant. Huge thanks to James Roddy for guiding me down the cave. Editing help was from Hugh Williams. Other guidance for this episode was from Anna Macquarie. You can find details of all the music used on our website, which is mountainpodcast.com. Go there to listen to all previous episodes and for some pictures of the caving trip. You'll also find a link to James's website for more amazing photography of caves around the UK. If you're enjoying the podcast, please go to iTunes, leave us a review. It really helps other people find us. Or just tell somebody else who might like it. Thanks very much, and thank you for listening today. I'm Christopher Slight, and this is Mountain.